Let me know how we're going to do this.
We'll just go over the stories that we mentioned. We don't have to go over all of them. We could skip the New Mutants one if you guys want. But because that leaves us with three of yours, and that leaves us with the Jurassic World one, which I don't know if that'll open up a whole conversation or not. And then the Zack Snyder stuff, which is always interesting.
Oh, we could also talk about the Cretaceous Park or camp or whatever.
Oh, yeah, Camp Cretaceous.
The Netflix release.
I like how you call it Cretaceous Park. It's Camp Cretaceous, as in the Cretaceous.
Cretaceous.
Period. No, Cretaceous.
It's pronounced Cretaceous.
No, it's not.
I think it is.
No, it's not. I think it is.
In my head, it is.
That's how I've been saying since I was in preschool. Cretaceous.
It's Cretaceous. There's no S between before the T.
I know, but you gotta like, I don't know.
No, he's like, oh no, you just gotta ignore the laws of language and just add in shit. It's like when people say Ashoka.
Oh, you already had this like, conversation.
Oh yeah, I'm just, it all
comes He's trying to do a thing. He's trying to do a thing. He's trying to call me out.
No, I'm just trying to say that, it's like when people say Gangnam Style, when clearly in the song he says Gangnam Style.
It's Gangnam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we could also talk.
Wait, what do people say?
Gangnam.
No, they don't. Do they really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Fuck those people.
Yeah, I know. I agree.
I have never heard this before.
What? Yeah. 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 It's a thing. I had so many people say that. Like, my old roommate used to say that, and I knew several other people who would say it. I'm like, what is wrong with you people? Say it right. He does. It's not even spelled out for, I mean, it is, but I think it's what it is. They see it spelled out, and in their heads, they complete it differently.
Huh.
Even though it's clearly said, it's pronounced one way. Okay. But yeah.
All right. Well, that's the thing. We're going to be talking about, so just to be clear, we're going to be talking about stuff that happened at Comic-Con, Jurassic World. Wait, was it Jurassic World? It's Jurassic World, right?
Yeah. Jurassic World, 3, Dominion. And Camp Cretaceous, and Camp Cretaceous.
Shut up.
Is that too many stories? It's like six stories.
Oh, we can cut. Like, I mean, we don't have a movie.
We just stop when we're done.
Yeah. It's not like we have a movie to talk about either. That had like 20 minutes. We didn't talk that long.
We have several like movies to talk about.
Not one we watched.
And I also do want to check in with, I do want to do my weekly One Piece check-in. There's that. Oh, also, Jonesy. So I have some guys.
I stopped.
You stopped?
Yeah.
Where?
I have not read anything past what we talked about last week.
Okay.
But there's a reason. There's a reason why.
Why?
Because I wanted to write the article first. And so the incentive to write the article was, I'm sorry, the incentive to read was to write the article. And so I do want to see what happens next. So I've been working on the article. So it's almost
done. Gotcha. I know the guys from the One Piece podcast are totally down to come on the show if you want to talk about your experience with the first
chapter. What? They want to come on? I want to go on their show.
I'm sure they'd be happy to have you.
Yes. Sexually? Carnally?
Of course. Just... Well, what are you talking about? That's what I was talking about.
I assume that's what you meant.
Okay. Just making sure.
I just wanted to be sure. I was trying to make sure Nick understood.
Did you understand, Nick?
What? I've been trying to find some mission news last minute.
Oh, God. You and your mission news.
It's a thing.
You know what the funny thing? While you were gone, there were buckets of mission news. And when you came back, you never even mentioned it.
Yeah, it's funny because it's like you never bring it up unless Jonesy brings it up. Like you never bring it unless he brings it up.
Well, I just forgot last week. Here, I got a story that's obviously bullshit, but it's fascinating. So I'll do that one.
I don't want fake news. This isn't that kind of podcast. Well,
I'll say it looks like fake news. it's a little over the top.
Are we doing the show now?
Sure, I'll put a thing. I'll make us a chat between us and the One Piece guys, and then we can figure out the time to film it. And you're allowed to obviously join in, Nick. So we can convince you that you need to watch.
Okay, that's what I was gonna ask. Is if can I sit that one out? Whenever you guys talk about One Piece,
I don't want you to sit that one out. I want you to be there while we discuss it.
Because my audio wasn't loud enough last week, but I made snoring noises during your guys' conversation, but my mic didn't even pick it up.
See, that's when you get like Foley sounds and it's like just drop that shit in there.
I already took me like 2 hours to edit.
I did that to Jammer once. Like he's like, I gotta go to the bathroom.
So yeah.
He added like just piss sounds. That was funny.
Good times. I don't even remember what show that was. That's all I remember. All I remember is that. I do not remember what the topic of that show was.
it gets easy to remember or to forget the shit that you talk about on a podcast. I was mentioning something on LR Morning earlier this week, and I was just like, I don't even know what podcast it was on. Was it on this podcast? Was it in that podcast? I don't know what fucking show it was that I mentioned this thing. And I don't even remember what it was that I was talking about.
What was the thing? Oh.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was.
Wait, is this the show? Or are we going to start?
This is the show. This could be the show.
This could be the show.
So Jammer, yeah, CAT scan. Like I said before we started the show, I'm very worried about you.
That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I got nothing for you. I mean, I think I'm perfectly fine. That's always been a problem. I've always been spacey because my mind likes to go think about other things, and then it abandons its initial thought process and has moved on to greater things. It drives my wife crazy.
So here's the deal. Here's what I'm going to do for you. Okay. I'm going to say a series of words. Okay. What I'd like you to be able to do is to repeat those words back to me later on.
I hear the test is really hard.
Are you ready though? Can you do it?
I don't, probably not, but continue.
Man, woman, camera, person, TV. Okay. You good?
I think so.
We're going to revisit that.
Okay.
Welcome to Breaking Geek Radio, the podcast, the premier podcast of LRM Online. I'm your host, Brandon Jones, and I've just given a test to Joseph Jammer Medina. I don't remember the name of the test, but it's a very hard test. It's a very difficult test.
We'll find out if he gets it right. I'm one of the smartest people of all time. We'll see if I have the best score of anybody out there who's had a score for this test.
And if he can say it right, he gets extra points.
Woo!
So, woohoo! Also in the room is Nick Dahl. What's going on, Nick?
Hey! How are you guys?
Doing all right? We're good. It's funny because I thought you were talking to the audience, and I'm like, they're not going to be able to respond to you, Nick.
I'm not talking to the audience, idiot.
What are you on, dude?
What am I on? Oh,
we're high on life.
Yeah, life.
High on life. So in this episode, we're going to be talking about a few things. We're going to be talking about Comic-Con. We're also going to... I'm sorry. Not Comic-Con. Comic-Con at home. Yes. We're also going to be talking about... what else? There's the big deal between Universal and AMC theaters. And a couple other things that happen in the world. Yeah, big, big deal. Huge deal. Huge. I'm doing the thing with my hands. Can you see
bigly.
It? Huge. Bigly. And we're going to see what's going to happen with that. I'm sure there are some strong opinions about AMC and Universal. Nick, did you still want to talk about the Emmys?
No, I don't have the list in front of me or anything. Just that it's interesting that Mandalorian was actually nominated because I don't think it has a chance in hell of winning. Because I love it, but really.
What did you get nominated for?
What?
You guys remember that? Did you ever watch the wrestling back in the late 90s when they had... No chance in hell where they had the corporation. I think that's what they're called. I don't remember. I don't watch wrestling anymore, but that's what I remember that. And when they had that song play whenever they came out. No chance. Mm-hmm. No chance in hell. But I agree. I don't think Mandalorian has any chance in hell. Or if it does win.
What was it nominated for?
Best drama. And it was nominated for 14 others as well. And I just don't. I do think some of the technical awards are very well earned. That is groundbreaking series in terms of technology. And it's just, that is the one thing that has me so excited about it. And for me, it's always been the thing where I'm like, hey, as much as I enjoyed most of the new trilogy and most of the Disney movies that have come out, I know, big shocker. One thing that they didn't have is they didn't have sort of the technology pushing angle, because back when George Lucas did the other six movies, pretty much each one of them in some way or another pushed technology in an unprecedented way. That did not happen with the sequel trilogy, but that did happen with The Mandalorian. So I thought it was kind of cool how it harkened back to that sort of Star Wars spirit, the old school Star Wars spirit. So I think that's well earned. But as far as like actually winning like best drama series, nah, sorry.
Yeah, no. It wasn't good enough.
Certainly not over Watchmen, which is the only thing that I'm excited about.
Watchmen was not nominated.
No, but like 26.
It has the most nominations, but it wasn't nominated for best drama, which is one of the ones.
Which was one of the things
I want to bring up.
Why is
that
it
makes sense?
Mandalorian get it over Watchmen?
Yeah. Why does it make
sense? I think it makes sense, right? Because the people who create the thing, who are a part of it, who act in it, and who did it from behind the scenes, they just made a thing, right? The sum of their parts don't actually mean shit. So that's how it makes sense.
Oh, gotcha. So you're saying it's more about the individual awards and not. But I mean, best drama, though. That should be what that is.
That's what I thought.
I'm not serious. I think that's fucking dumb as hell.
What are you talking about?
It makes absolutely no fucking sense. Like, it's ridiculous.
So good. I mean, the other one, main ones that are exciting, I didn't even look at the comedy ones. I mean, Better Call Saul, which I haven't been watching, but it's obviously top notch.
I didn't watch last season, but because I never watch. I always wait till they come on Netflix because I don't have cable.
Yeah,
no. I've only watched the first. But I always binge it. I always binge it so fast whenever it comes out. It is. I feel like it goes slower each season, but it's still somehow more engaging each season. It is so good.
And then what's his face from that got nominated, whose name I can never pronounce?
Bob Odenkirk?
No, I can pronounce that. Gus. Gus. He's everywhere now, and his next move is Marvel. My God, I love that name.
Giancarlo Esposito.
Yeah, I mean, he's even the Mandalorian connection. And then the other thing I was thinking of was that, oh yeah, Stranger Things, which I agreed on also, because I love that show. And then the other interesting thing was that Netflix has the most nominations of any network. That's really all I have to talk about the Emmys.
Yeah, it's a good thing we didn't talk about the Emmys.
Also, I'm glad we didn't.
Originally, I wanted to go in depth about it, but that's all I remember and want to talk about. So,
okay.
I don't know about Stranger Things. I feel like I'm trying to remember last season. Was that last year?
Yeah, last July.
Yes.
Last July. That felt like so long ago. It felt like longer ago.
The Russian conspiracies and.
You know, as far as Stranger Things goes, I thought it was entertaining and fine, but it did feel a bit Scooby-Doo to me.
Yeah.
I don't know if I like that. But I mean, it was fine. It just, I don't think it was as good as the first two seasons. Yeah. Have we talked about season two? Season two? How that extra
a little bit.
That everybody hates?
Yeah.
Yes, we have talked about it a little bit.
Okay. Because I like that episode.
You were annoyed that everybody was so upset.
Yeah. Well, I'm mostly annoyed when people say, oh, it's clearly filler. Oh, there's no point. Which there is a point to it. And I'm going to say it again, even though I've said it before. The point of that was that you needed to actually give Eleven, give her some agency for the first time, like ever in the show. And actually give her the decision to come back and do something rather than just being tossed around like she had for the first two seasons, or season and a half, I guess. Anyway, there was no big moment on that level for me for season three.
I would say it was dropped in the worst possible place of the season.
Near the end? I think it's good.
No, I think it should come out one episode earlier because it just halts the momentum, because the other one ends with them crawling out of the hole and like they're about to all die.
Perfectly. It's the
best.
Then
that one came on. And I was going to watch it on one night, but then the show suddenly halts all of its momentum. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to bed and I'll finish it tomorrow.
This reminds me of a little arc in One Piece. Jonesy, do you know what arc I'm going to talk about? Which one am I going to talk about? Oh, you haven't been there yet. Damn it. No, you haven't gotten there yet. Damn it.
So there was a moment like that in the first 100 chapters where they just completely went back into the past. And I was like, what? Did I miss the thing? And then I was like, oh, okay, I get it now.
So I will say this, there is this really great moment. I'm not going to say the specifics, but there's this moment where they go up against a bad guy and it's all been building towards this. And literally you have the main character basically ready to unload with a mammoth punch against the bad guy. And as he's about to punch, it cuts away to a long, long flashback. And then right after the flashback ends, it continues with like the conclusion of that punch and he's defeated. And it's awesome.
Reminds me of when South Park did their first cliffhanger from season one to season two. And they were like, it's about who's Cartman's dad or something, and then the first episode of the next season is like the thrilling finale will not be shown today. Instead, we're showing a Ferris and Phillips special.
Oh yeah.
Why would you remember? It was like 20 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, that show's old.
I've watched them on DVD as recently as 15 years ago. And
yeah, no, that was like 20. That was legit 20 years ago.
No, it was.
That's crazy.
It was.
But yeah, crazy. Look forward to that, Jonesy. You'll know it once you get to it, to that moment. But
All right. I have to wait. I have to finish the story. 2 minutes Turkish. I'll finish the story and then I will finish the book.
5 minutes Turkish.
So, 5 minutes Turkish. It was 3 minutes, 5 minutes ago. I don't know. Is that how he says it? Is that how
something
it works?
Like that. I don't remember. It's the basic like logic that. Of that is there.
Yes. Got it. Nailed it. All right. Moving on from the Emmys, because that's about all we had to say about it. So the bigger story is Comic-Con at home. So I'm going to lead with the thing that, like, the biggest thing that I was going to say about it, which was the fact that general consensus is that it was a dud. We got lots of videos, lots of panels, lots of trailers. I do think that for what they had to do in such a short amount of time, I do think that they did pretty well. It just didn't attract me. Like, I didn't want to watch all those panels the way that they were set up.
So, yeah.
And so to that point, tweets and mentions of Comic-Con at home were down 95% from 2019's live convention. And they said they had just 93,000 tweets in the first 5 days versus 1.7 million tweets in 2019. Tweets about the top 10 TV events were similarly down 93%. And tweets about the top movie panels were down 99%. So yeah, that's not good. First, I want to ask you guys, do you think that if there's so much supposition in here, if they find a vaccine for COVID and this time next year, there can be a live Comic-Con, do you think that this will recover?
No. I mean, it's not going to recover by next year. Not next year, but maybe the year after.
What, you mean if they actually have it? I think there'll be more of a demand for Comic-Con than ever before, and it'll be huge.
But not next year.
Why not?
Next year. What do you mean, why not? Because they're not going to have a fucking vaccine until like maybe
freaking May or June. Well, no, that's what the Jammer's saying. Jonesy's saying if they have a vaccine and they open up, right?
Yeah, I don't think people are going to trust it for the first several months. I think it'll take some time.
Somebody's got to test it first.
And then, basically the next year, I think it'll be bigger.
I think you underestimate people's need to do things, even though, I don't know.
There's a difference between going out and going to the theater and then going to a fucking crowded ass convention hall with 150,000 people. Like, I think those are two very different things.
I know it's smaller, but I can't wait to go to Denver Comic Con next year. Like, if it's safe. Well, I'm saying if they open and if there's a vaccine, I'm not saying it does. If it's available, I really want to go.
Oh, Jammer. Let me tell you what's not going to happen. Denver Comic Con.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. I feel like Nick here is eager to get COVID again. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
I've heard that's possible. I read a thing.
It is.
I'm hearing
it. It must be true. And there have never been any wrong information about COVID at all throughout this whole several month period. So it must be right.
Right.
I think it's, I'll send it to you guys. I'm actually being serious. I'm not.
No, I read articles about people catching it a second time. Like a lot of articles.
Yeah. It's kind of a bummer.
It is a bummer.
But then my dad read an article that I haven't seen, and he's not some dumbass. He follows real news probably even better than me. But the scientists actually think that it's COVID coming back that never left the system, not catching it a second time.
Right. I did actually hear about that too, where it's more about, it's never left the system and people are having relapses, so to speak.
Like months later, that's cool. 3 months later. Yeah, I have that to look forward to.
It's like herpes. Nice.
Yeah. Well, I will say this. I did write an article all about COVID-19. I have no sources and I no actual expertise in the situation, but I wrote it and I don't think it's ever going away.
Really?
Those are my thoughts. Yeah.
Wait, did you publish this on LRM?
Absolutely. That's definitely the best place that it could have been published. I also published it in ebook format on Kindle. And I think I have a deal with Barnes & Noble that could go through, fingers crossed.
I don't like you right now with a stolen.
Sorry about cover. That. I'm being really right with the stolen cover. I'm being really jaded right now. I apologize, but
I think we are really jaded right now.
I have to say that. I have to say stuff like that just to keep from crying about the amount of things that I can't be.
Yeah,
you know what's funny about that though? I think that what 2020 did was there were things that were happening at Comic-Con or even slightly before where it's like I just don't give a fuck. So. Jammer, you want to talk about New Mutants? I feel like that and Tenet and like other things are just fucking worn out their welcome. And it's like just do the thing already. Like this year is bad enough already. Like I don't need to hear about you and all these other things that just aren't gonna happen now or will be delayed and whatever. Because I'm actually kind of curious. We can transition into one of the first Comic-Con stories.
I don't want to do that yet. Don't want to do that.
You don't want to do that yet?
No, because I do want to talk about my own personal sort of feelings on my own personal experiences. And as someone who was just like, oh, I just got through a move. And oh, Kirsten, my wife, please. I'm probably going to be really occupied over the next several days, even though we just moved into a house. So please keep that in mind, thinking that there was going to be a whole bunch of things only to find out that A, it was really, really hard to keep track of events. And B, there wasn't really anything that was like game-changing, exciting, period. So it was like a mix of things where studios have been pulling so much stuff that it almost made the event not worth it. And there was just too much, too bifurcated. What was it, over 350 panels or something, or 250, whatever
something
the number
like
was.
That.
too many. That is too many for an online event. There was no easy way to keep track of where everything was. Like, yeah, they have the website, but I mean, like,
website was a mess.
Yeah. Just keep in the future. If we have Comic-Con at home next year, make it like 50 events and make it really easy to find where everything is. That's all I have to say.
I think part of the problem too is they didn't have any of the giant panels. Mm-hmm. Like Marvel and DC were just like, fuck off.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think Lucasfilm pulled out too, right?
And because we still don't know that when part of the thing is going to come out.
Oh, you're right. So. Yeah, I guess, yeah, wasn't Lucasfilm usually as part of a Disney panel? Or I don't even remember so far.
But yeah, I guess that's hard to keep track of now, that basically if it's Star Wars or Marvel, it's Disney. So it's just gone.
Yeah, it must be its own thing. Because, you know, Marvel always has their own.
And then Disney was planning on doing Star Wars Celebration, but obviously that was canceled as well.
Yeah.
Which I'm surprised they're not doing an online event for. I feel like that'd be prime. What they really need to do is they all need to take a page out of Nintendo's book and just do a bunch of Nintendo Direct types things and just announce things and make fun little presentations like that. Not even fun. Just very, here's the information.
Not even fun.
I mean, well, it's kind of super funny. Exciting, but it's just like it goes through, here is the thing. Here is some footage from it. Nice to see you. We'll talk to you later. Bye. Like, just do that. We just want the information. Like, I know you're trying to bring the culture of a Comic-Con into it, but it's just not as engaging on a fan level when you're reading about it or when you're just watching it in video. Just do it. Give us the information. It's more fun when you're there.
And that makes sense, right? Because one of the big complaints about this Comic-Con was that fact that there is no interaction, whereas Nintendo Direct, it's never designed for that. Yeah. So with Comic-Con, like, you get to see all these stars and all this other stuff, but one of the bigger experiences of Comic-Con is being able to walk up there, walk up to the mic and ask somebody your stupid fucking question and have them respond. You're just like, oh my God, I'm so excited. I got to talk to like whoever. And, you know, that experience is gone now. So I do think that you're right. And what I also think is interesting is that the games industry, not just Nintendo Direct, but Sony is doing that already. All these other big,
state of play
game companies are pulling away from E3. So this has already been happening on that side of the house, and it is very interesting that these movie studios were not able to pivot and do something like that.
Then again, they did have to pivot pretty quickly. I understand why they weren't able to. I completely get it. I think it was just a way for them to say, hey, maybe we could try something new, and also maybe we can retain some of the sponsorships and recoup some of the lost costs along the way in some way. I do know they worked in tandem with Collider, who helped bring a lot of this stuff. And Collider is really like getting into the whole events planning thing. That's sort of like their new direction with the big, prestigious filmmaker-driven events. So I think this was another big project for them. Good for you. I think they did as good of a job as they could have done. I think they did a great job. I think everyone who's involved should be proud. But at the end of the day, it isn't necessarily what people wanted. What people were ready to dig deep. Like, if I were to say, like, oh, I wonder if there's going to be a panel about this, like, where do you start?
How do you know? Yeah. And I think the thing that sucks the most about that was, so I said at the top, and I agree with you, I think for what they did, it was good, but it seems like the technical issues weren't theirs. The content was pretty good. Like, the one that I watched the most, the longest, was the Star Trek one for Discovery. So they were able to get a significant portion of the cast to come in and do lines from an episode that hasn't come out yet. So you got to see all of that and see all the stars do all that. And they talked about their roles, how much they liked it and what the show meant to them and all this other stuff. And, you know, I've been to a Comic-Con before. So, but in my experience doesn't really rise or fall on whether or not I get to be in the same room as these people. So it's just fun for me to see that. But you're right, that other aspect of being able to find what you want quickly, it was difficult. That was sent to me by someone. So a friend sent that to me, and then my wife found it as well. And that's the only reason that I knew that it was happening.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it's really hard to get the word out when there's so much content being put out there. And it's not just, it's like 40 to 50 minutes long, you know, it's not short. And it's hard. We're all on Zoom calls so often these days that it's like, do I really want to sit in front of the camera and watch another Zoom conversation? It's not engaging.
I heard the fan event that was not related to Comic-Con at all with Zack Snyder was more entertaining. And well, it was actually interactive and live.
Yeah, Zack Snyder's really good at that. I think he did the same thing he did with that one BVS watch Watch Party. That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah. Watch Party, where afterwards he brought in like actual fans. Like they had someone coming in. They basically would bring in a bunch of fans and they would ask him questions. There was like 20 of them and they got to speak directly to him.
But you know what's crazy with that stuff about his thing? If you've watched any of it and if you noticed it, you know, like everyone else's Zoom call quality, it looks like he shot his film with the same camera he uses on Batman v Superman and the same lighting set. He looks like a feature film when everyone else has just done like Zoom.
He used a long lens, like good camera and like a long lens. So like
even like the lighting's around him perfect
and the lighting was good. Like it's like no fuck. He's a filmmaker. Like he takes this shit seriously. And yeah, it was funny. I saw that meme online too.
I didn't see that, but I did see there was something. There was a picture of him, like a still shot, and he was using what looked like an iPhone on a gimbal. So, you know,
wow.
It's all about just, the lighting and just sort of the way he did it. He's like, he's able to make amazing things out of very little.
Yeah, it definitely looked like a Zack Snyder film, not just a Zack Snyder panel.
Yeah. So, yeah. But I think that's a good transition into Jammer, another one of the stories you want to talk about. I thought you wanted to talk about Snyder.
Oh, I do. Sorry. Last time you tried to transition into New Mutants. So I was trying to pick up from that.
Oh, no. You slapped me in the face from that.
I slapped Snyder.
So I was like, you know what? I was like, no, we're going to move into that.
Okay. Let's move to Snyder then. When it comes to Zack Snyder, so Jurassic World 3 apparently is going to be a very global and epic story based on recent comments. I'm kidding. So Zack Snyder.
Like, what the fuck's that?
What's happening?
Is he directing now?
That was so funny. No, sorry. Anyway, so Zack Snyder said recently, and I'm actually more interested to hear what Nick has to say about this, because you were pretty vocal on Twitter how much you didn't like this. He recently spoke and said, "I would set the movie on fire. I'd destroy it before I use a single frame that I did not photograph." And the implication there is that he's not going to use any footage that was shot by Joss Whedon in the theatrical cut of Justice League. How do you feel about that, Nick? Because maybe you felt a certain way at the time, but maybe you've changed your mind in that week since then. I don't know.
Well, I'll say what I originally said, and then I'll say what someone kind of talked me down on it a little bit. Or I just said, just the wording of it is goddamn disrespectful to Joss Whedon.
Okay.
Like, I'm going to set, like, it's not like you could have set it softer. Like, oh yeah, why would I use footage by another director? Which is just, someone brought that up and it's a good point. Like, why would I use footage that wasn't part of my vision? But it says like, I would rather burn this to the ground than have a single frame directed by Joss Whedon.
That reminds me of the comments from Daniel Craig after shooting Spectre. He's like, I would rather slash my wrist and jump off a building than to do another one now.
And then he did.
Well, he said right now at this moment.
Yeah.
Because I think he was just exhausted in that moment.
So it only disappoints me in one way, because probably my favorite scene in the entire movie is the Batman's introduction scene. And I know that was by Joss Whedon, where the thief, the guy always in like Snyder, not Snyder films, Fincher projects, like Mindhunter is on the roof. And then Batman like kills a parademon up there and then he captures the criminal.
Yeah, I didn't like that scene. So I'm happy it's gone.
It's probably the only scene I liked in the movie.
Anyways, continue.
Oh, no. So I guess my point, I mean, I still think it's a disrespectful way to say it and kind of even childish, but I don't know. That's about all I have on it. I'm not.
Yeah.
The one other thing it says, I probably wouldn't watch it, but that was obviously hyperbole, because I love a good dumpster fire or car accident when I see it.
Sure.
So I'm going to slow down enough to look at the car accident.
What do you think about that, Brandon? About his comments? Do you agree with Nick on this one, or are you just like, nah, F Joss Whedon and the horse he rode in on?
I didn't read it, so I cannot.
Well, I just said it.
That is the full quote.
So that's it. That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm kind of conflicted. Like, I understand that he went through a thing and that his daughter passed away, and he, you know, he had some trials and tribulations in his life. I've kind of got to the point where I don't know him as a person, but his public silence about kind of the way his fans have been acting, and then kind of this, which comes off as throwing gasoline on a fire a little bit, where people just like to hate on Whedon because of what he did with the movie. I don't care for it or him. And there's kind of this question of what's your responsibility for your fandom? Like, are you responsible for those people? But sometimes I get the impression that if he had said something like, hey, you know, I really appreciate you guys pushing for this movie. I feel the love. I appreciate it. Just if you wouldn't mind being respectful about it. Because there were people who were legit being harassed with the release of Snyder Cut hashtag. And I relate that to this story and seeing that's kind of the same thing. Like that lack of concern for how those basically soccer hooligans were acting and him saying this now. And so whoever said that to Nick, I think they're right that it doesn't make sense for him to use another director's stuff, but you don't have to say it like that. And given how his fans have been behaving, I think it's kind of, I don't like the way he put that out into the world.
Exactly. That's what I meant. 100%. And that's what I decided.
Yeah, I agree. It doesn't make sense for him to use another filmmaker's footage, especially if it's being coined as Zack Snyder's Justice League. But yeah, I agree. It didn't need to be worded in that way because that's not helpful. It's not respectful. It's not really what you do in the business, you know, because it's all about connections and, you know, you don't want to burn any bridges. Then again, I don't know if he knows anything about Joss Whedon and anything that Joss Whedon did. Like maybe because I know him and Ray Fisher are friends, maybe he knows some stuff and is just like, nah, fuck that guy. But yeah, we don't know for sure. That's all speculation. But I guess I'm public facing. It's not good to feed the fan fire of hatred because it's so prevalent already online.
Yeah, that's it exactly.
Tying into it, Ray Fisher's most recent quote was interesting. Mm-hmm. Where he's like, just go ahead and sue me for libel.
He said, if I said anything that is wrong, incorrect, I encourage him to sue me for libel or slander. And he also went on to say that it took him 2.5 years to find enough people to speak out, you know, anonymously or on the record or whatever, and that he could build a case that can't be ignored.
So yeah, but at the same time, if like I'm very meditated, Whedon, I just don't have to respond at all.
I mean,
like, why would I sue someone? Why would I even respond to it? If I just ignore it, it goes away and my career speaks for itself. And who's joined him? I didn't even know he had other people because that's always been my thing. It's like,
I don't think he's revealed it all yet. I think it's still sort of a thing they're putting together.
Because it's like you think other people would speak out immediately when he said that. Like maybe like, because it's like, yeah, has anyone complained about being on the Avengers sets with Whedon?
Okay, well, once again, that's not the same thing. He's talking about the Justice League set. You can't say,
yeah, but why would Whedon suddenly change his, like,
I don't know.
Why would he suddenly be cruel to DC actors when he's had a great working relationship with Marvel actors?
Yeah, but that's like saying, you know, this person didn't do anything bad to me. I have a hard time believing that they did it to you. I'm not saying that.
Well, I don't know if he did or not,
but that's the flip side of it.
Yeah, I don't think saying no one came out on Avengers set, so therefore the people in Justice League set are lying. Right. I don't think that's the way to do it. But I do think, yeah, there needs to be corroborating evidence from other people, under individuals. I don't know if there have been anyone else to come forward about it, but it does sound like he's building a case and that we will probably hear something in the months to come.
Well, that's better because originally when he said the first stuff, my immediate thought, I mean, again, I do not know, he could be 100% correct, but my immediate thought was, oh, he just feels like he was screwed because he was cut out of the movie and now he's being vindictive.
I don't know. That doesn't make any sense though, because he's getting a movie with all of his footage in it. So like that makes no sense why he would come out now when he's getting that movie.
I thought this was before they agreed to release the Snyder Cut. I don't remember.
It was after. It was like 3 weeks after.
Oh. Yeah, so I don't know if there's truth to it or not in the form. Yeah, it'll be good to see what develops out of it, and then maybe we'll get a better picture. But I'm getting us off topic.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say I don't know and I don't care. Like, I just don't. Until I know something more substantive about what he actually did or whether or not there's any corroborating evidence, I don't know and I don't care. That's how I feel about it.
I agree.
But I do think it's like inviting lawsuits for it. That's kind of dumb.
Yeah, that's why stupid. That's the comment that I was like, Whedon can either deny it. He doesn't have to fucking sue him. Well, why would he bother?
Because it's his way of saying, if it's not true, prove it, right? Like if what I'm saying is not true, you would sue me because this is what we do in Hollywood. I'm just saying like from my, it's childish and stupid. It's just like, a dumb thing to say.
No one sues like Josh Trank or Bryan Singer when they misbehave on set. It comes out and they get in trouble, but no one's like, I'm going to, if you don't agree with me, sue me.
Yeah, I don't think anybody cares about Josh Trank anymore. As far as Bryan Singer goes, I kind of, I don't want to say he's done, but I get the impression that he has become persona non grata in Hollywood.
Yeah, you get accused of raping underage people, and it's like, yeah, that I would hope that you're persona non grata. That's messed up.
Yeah, that's the story. That's it.
I was already depressed about all the COVID talk.
Sorry, let's move on to less depressing article stuff. Let's see here. What was on the list of things to talk about?
New Mutants. Do you want to circle back around to that?
Sure. So, yeah.
I'll talk about it. Let's talk about the New Mutants.
Jesus Christ.
So, I think one thing I thought was funny, I do think it's funny how they took the piss out of themselves in the opening to this video where it shows all of the release dates and it crossed them out, and then another one crossed it out, and it does like four times. And at the very end of that opening, it says August 28th, fingers crossed. And
yeah, not gonna happen.
It's not gonna happen. Ironically, I think they started pulling those dates from the international release material, so that's probably not gonna happen. But I do think it's also interesting that Josh Boone, that's who it is.
Yeah.
The director, he recently talked about why they haven't released it on streaming services, and apparently it's a contractual thing, according to him. That
really?
Yeah, it sounds like they were. I don't know in whose contracts they were, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was like, what the hell is that girl's name? Anya Taylor-Joy and Maisie Williams, sort of the bigger ones, that it was in their contracts for a theatrical release movie, and that they probably just want to fulfill those obligations legally. That's my guess based on those comments from Josh Boone, but I just thought it was interesting, and it kind of makes me a bit bummed. I'm like, oh, it doesn't mean that Disney just is like all about New Mutants. Like, I was kind of hoping that it would be something like that. So I'm kind of bummed on that front, but who knows? It could still be a good movie for all we know. The fact that they still are trying to push it and they keep still trying to throwing a little bit of more extra marketing money on it every single time they realize, oh, it's not going to be released for a few more months. We'll push it again in another couple of months. It's weird, but good for them.
I love that thing.
Wait,
that
so you wanted it to be drama?
Drama? What? No. I wanted it to be, I don't even know. What do you mean I wanted it to be drama? Did I say something?
I thought you... I'm sorry. I thought you said Disney just wasn't all about New Mutants.
No, I wanted it to be them to be a. I wanted the reason for them to release like to be like, hey, we're going to release this in theaters is because we think that it'll really resonate with theater goers.
Oh,
like okay. I thought it was like a mark of this is going to be a quality movie, therefore really pushing for a theatrical release. That's what I was hoping for.
Mm. We'll see it in 2030. No, but I love that they did that thing at the beginning because that just feels like I know this movie's darker, but it feels like Deadpool humor. You know, where it's like, let's make fun of ourselves in the trailer.
Yeah.
And wasn't the other New Mutants story before we get into the footage that it was originally part of the real timeline?
Yeah.
And, like, it took place in like the 80s around the time of was it Apocalypse? Yeah, Apocalypse is what ruined it, right? Not Dark Phoenix.
Right. Yeah, it was Apocalypse, and then the Apocalypse came out and didn't resonate, and there was they were like,
even gonna have
different.
Storm in it and Professor X, I think.
Do something different. Do something different. And so right now, as a result, he's like, it takes place in this sort of nebulous time period where it's not like the past. And is it the present? I don't know. The present? But yeah, I just think it's interesting.
It's interesting phrasing. You say it didn't resonate. I just say it was a bad movie.
I mean,
I guess that's a
less objective take you have there. Mine is just it clearly didn't resonate with a lot of people. People didn't like it. I think it's a little more objective than it's just a bad movie.
Well, I'll be less subjective or more whatever and say that it was a giant steaming pile of shit.
Okay.
There
you
go.
I think it's the same amount of subjectivity that he brought to it. It's just stronger words.
Just more cursing.
It's more cursing.
Just more
and
cursing.
Speaking of cursing, you know who else curses a lot? Kevin Smith. And guess who else is releasing a movie soon? Kevin Smith.
Talk about the footage. Segue to where.
Oh, damn it. Okay. Well, I'll come back later.
I think Segway's moving too fast.
You gotta drive it off a cliff like the owner of Segway.
God damn it. I was gonna say the same thing. I feel bad. I feel really
It was
guilty.
A long time ago.
Was it? I don't remember how long ago it was.
It's been years. No, but I want to say that I just watched the footage today because you gave us the timestamp. The opening footage.
Yeah.
But that new trailer, man, it's even better than the first trailer, and I've loved the trailers for this movie. Mm-hmm. I think it looks fantastic. I mean, obviously, Fox didn't agree because there are tons of reshoots, but I believe Disney is using the original cut.
Yeah,
basically. Because I think they did reshoots over so many years, those kids probably grew up.
Mm-hmm.
But right. I love the original trailer. I love this new like 45-second trailer even more. It looks way bigger. I mean, still super claustrophobic and horror-y, but like just also way bigger with that giant finale we're gonna see with the big bear.
Mm-hmm.
And the footage was pretty impressive. Like really, the footage was really impressive. Also, the opening footage.
What do you think, Brandon?
Remember when I was like, I feel like these things have worn out their welcome. Just release the damn movie. I don't care. Just release the movie.
I mean, there is one. My old boss at the movie theater, there's one Cinemark open in the state and like six in the country. So if they need a theatrical window, just drop it there and then give us our Disney Plus release.
Generally speaking, I'm kind of burned out on X-Men movies. So between this and Apocalypse and Dark Phoenix and what was one before that?
Logan?
Days of Future Past? Like, do you mean X-Men?
Yeah, I think Logan, Days of Future Past, I kind of go back and forth on. But I'm just a little burned out on X-Men movies, so I don't care. Release the movie.
I mean, I'm watching this intro right now. It's pretty engaging.
Yeah, no, I think that it looks like they've done a lot of things right with the movie. I just wish it had come out already.
Yeah, I know. I want to see it. I want to see all of it, guys.
Now it's kind of legendary because it's been pushed back so many times.
Yeah, you kind of it's at this point right now where it's like you just want to see it go all the way. And by all the way, I mean never come out and constantly be advertised. Like every year, Disney should dedicate like $10 million of advertising to the New Mutants.
And show 20 more seconds.
Yeah, or just have different trailers out for it and just keep pushing it back forever in perpetuity.
What's the Fantastic Four movie that's never come out yet?
Oh, the Roger Corman version from the 90s?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it should be like that. We should have a new one of those. That can be this.
Except this one, I want a new trailer every year.
Fine. Done.
What if we have a new trailer every year, and each year it shows 2 minutes of new footage. So by the end of year 60, we have seen the entire movie, and we can just cut it together ourselves.
I love it.
Okay. What's that service? Kibi? Chibi?
Quibi?
Oh, Quibi?
That one. Quibi. That one. Yeah, stick it on there.
I don't understand that platform, but that's also a different story for a different time.
Because we all have ADD, and we just, you know, I can only handle, what is it, 2 minutes?
YouTube's for.
The easy way to remember Quibi is by what it's supposed to stand for. It's short for quick bites.
Yeah, when they originally announced it before it came out, I heard an interview on NPR with, like, the creator, and he's like, this is why it's going to be great, and we actually support for real studios, which they do, but it's like...
I was actually very excited for it. I was really excited for it. Because the reason why is I'm all about people trying to tell stories in different formats. And I thought that the, you know, 5 to 10 minute method is seemed like it had potential for modern day serialization that we don't quite see now. And it could lead to different pacing and storytelling and a different way of actually pushing people from scene to scene. And I was hoping it would lead to real innovation on that front. And I just thought that was a cool idea. There's this other service that is great called Serial Box. And that is, it's literally, how long is it? It's an hour and a half minute episodes, quote unquote, of audio content. Of basically audiobook, like high quality audiobook with like some sound effects and some music and stuff with a voice actor. And it's released one episode a week. And I know partnerships with Marvel, and they had like Jessica Jones and Black Widow and those types of shows being on that platform. And it's just a different way of consuming a story. And I just thought there was lots of opportunity there. But then I had it for the first 90 days and I watched it, the content for the first couple weeks, and I just kind of fell off. It wasn't as engaging as I wanted. It also didn't help that nobody commutes anymore. So that really ate up a lot of their potential. But I think there was potential there for actual stuff. It's just the stuff they had there wasn't that great. So yeah, I bet you in about 20 years, we're going to have something that is kind of similar to it at least.
But you have it now.
I get what you're saying. Yeah. My point is that the market will have matured in a way that it's caught up. The people's mindsets are caught up with the service itself. I'm not saying it's like, oh, it's ahead of its time. It's iconic. I'm just saying, the stars will have aligned a little bit better.
I feel like the market has kind of spoken on this, right? So you had Vine, you had Queef, you have Vine, and it's weird because I don't think that artificially limiting how much you can film or how long the thing is going to be is the thing. You already have a platform for this. You have multiple platforms that can do this. And so you as an artist can choose that. And if your content is of a quality that draws people in, you don't require the platform to artificially limit it. Like, you will have made content that makes people want to see it anyway. It doesn't matter how long it is.
I disagree, because that's like saying TV shows are different. TV is different from film by nature of the medium. I think by creating, having a different medium that has different limitations inherently changes the way you tell stories. And it's basically saying like, oh, well, movie, that's just two TV shows put together. There's not going to be any difference in how you tell the story. Like, I just think that's wrong.
And yet we don't know if a Snyder Cut will be a movie or a TV show.
Well,
yeah, right.
I guess the way I look at it is those things have existed. The market has existed for it. And if they were going to take off, now would be the time, because those kinds of devices are ubiquitous. People with phones, and that does not seem to be what people want.
I think it could have done, but I don't know if it would have worked, but I'm saying the market was not great for it because of coronavirus. People, I think, cause it's made to be consumed like, oh, I'm going to hop on the bus, or, oh, I'm going to go ahead and do something for walk around for 5 minutes or 10 minutes. And that commuting mindset isn't there anymore because of COVID-19. So it was just really bad timing. And it's like, and it also doesn't help that the service doesn't have an Apple TV or like an actual TV app. Like, it has to be on the phone, which is dumb. So there was no way, like, if I'm going to sit on my couch at home, I'm not going to hold my phone in front of my dumb face. I'm going to go ahead and, you know, watch it on my TV. And there's no easy way to do that.
Yeah, now that I'm commuting less, I'm listening to a lot less podcasts, including ones by, this is your segue jammer, Kevin Smith.
Who's Kevin Smith?
Wait, really? You don't know who Kevin
Smith? Let's
die. I am sorry. Sorry, you know, it's funny. As you did it, I was getting excited. I was like, yeah, I could totally jump in. But I was like, nah, I'm just not going to do it. I'm going to see what happens. But yes, by Kevin Smith. That is correct. He is a podcaster, obviously. And he's also a filmmaker who...
Debatable.
He makes movies. He's a movie maker.
I don't know. He's definitely not a filmmaker.
Okay. Actually, you know
anymore. What? Anymore.
I take that back, because the word film, it's fine. Whatever.
Oh, like, God. I don't like go. Martin Scorsese.
Yeah. No. Just the idea of where, like, there's a movie and then there's a film. It's like, no.
He's making podcasts on film. Just shit he discusses turns into a movie with a terrible script and just his friends.
It is like funny. It's
Ralph Garman, who I can't stand. Just
they look like they're getting shot worse and worse too.
Yeah.
I thought Red State was probably his best looking movie, because before they never had great looking movies. Like, obviously Clerks didn't look great. Mallrats is
the first one. Well, at least back then they had a full studio team.
Mallrats didn't look great. And then you had even Dogma and Jay and Silent Bob. They were okay, but they weren't, there's nothing special about them.
No, but I would say they look like theatrical releases, whereas everything he's done since Red State looks like a student film. Like, that's how much worse it's gotten.
Even Tusk? I thought Tusk looked okay.
Yeah, I did enjoy Tusk. I can't remember how good it looked. But
I think it looked fine. But yeah, I think, after Tusk is really when it went down.
Like, Chainsaw Bob reboot looks like a fucking student project. As much as I wanted to love that movie. I know you actually liked it, and I tore it apart in my review.
No, I thought it was fine. Like, the thing is, I thought it was fine. It was entertaining. Like, it definitely, as a fan of Kevin Smith, it accomplished something, but I'm not going to say it was a good movie at all. Yoga Hosers was not good at all.
Oh my God, that was atrocious.
And Kilroy Was Here, I think that also looks terrible.
It looks like Yoga Hosers.
It looks like Yoga Hosers in terms of overall quality, though. It looks like it's actually going for like the genuine slasher-esque type scares. For those who don't know, this is based on, what is it, that World War II quote-unquote meme of like the drawings on the walls where they had this guy with his nose peeking over the wall saying Kilroy was here. I don't know where the origins of that thing is, but apparently they're making a horror movie. He made a horror movie about it. I remember the podcast he brought up years ago. I completely forgot this thing was happening. And then they dropped this.
I didn't know it was, but I haven't paid that much attention to Kevin Smith in the last few years.
I mean, he talked about the actual movie like probably 5 years ago.
Oh, damn.
So it's been a while. But yeah, it's just interesting that it's here now. But I don't think it looks great. But what about you, Brandon? You haven't said much of anything yet.
Looks fine. Like, it just, I'm not a Kevin Smith guy. So I saw this.
Ignore the fact that it's Kevin Smith.
Yeah. And to Nick's point about, you know, this is stuff that's being made with his friends. Like, yeah, this looks like it falls in that same vein. And so you got Jay in there, like, dropping little lines. And it comes off very Scooby-Doo-ish. That's maybe slightly more mature. And so it doesn't look like a movie that's up my alley, but you never know. I don't know. It's weird. Like, I see a movie like Cabin in the Woods, I'm like, yeah, that's totally my movie. And I see this, I'm like, nah. And I don't think it necessarily has to do with who made it. There's just something about it. It looks, to Nick's point, kind of amateurish. It's very surprising.
I feel bad saying this. Really bad saying this. I agree with what Nick said in terms of, like, Kevin Smith. Here's the thing. I'm torn for this reason. Clearly, Kevin Smith is happier now than he's ever been in his life. He probably has the best mental outlook on everything. He doesn't take anything too seriously. He's able to make things and have fun with it and just seems like an all-around amazing person and who has the right way of living life. Good for you. He's able to do this and just keep living his life. That's awesome. However, I feel like it was that insecure side from the past, that less stoner version of him that made him do better work, that need for validation or that need to try to tell something that meant something and that need to maybe take notes from other people that weren't him really helped make better movies. And in the past decade or so, he doesn't do that anymore. He's made it perfectly clear that, you know, I'm just making movies for me. And this is me about making movies with the people I love. And that's all it is. And there's no one there to tell him yes or no. He's a very astute businessman. He knows he has great relationships with the people who give him money. He's able to, because of his platform, recoup his costs almost immediately whenever he releases these movies. And because of that, everyone's happy. He gets to make a movie. Everybody gets paid. Fans get another movie, get to see him speak live again to talk about the movie. And it's just like, all parties are happy. Why would he need to actually try to evolve and grow as a filmmaker when all of those pieces are working in tandem together?
Yeah, and he has the super fans still. Like, I would have used to have been. Mm-hmm. We'll watch anything he makes. But it's just like, I don't know. I used to be a giant Kevin Smith fan. I still love his earlier stuff. I mean, I listened to like the first 300 episodes of Smodcast. I listened to all of his podcasts at one point. But then it just kind of became I don't know. He stopped caring about fans like me. That's not even the right way to put it. But it's just like,
caring about actually making good films. And just, it's like those things where you make a joke and you think, this is just funny to me. It's obviously not going to go in the story, but it's funny to me right now. Except that's all of his movies now. And no one there to say, no, you probably should cut that out because it's not very funny or very good unless you're really, really, really entrenched in it.
And he always writes a movie in a night and he's stoned all the time. I question if he does any rewrites on the first drafts of most of his movies. Like, it just feels like, blah, like he threw up everything he liked and then was like, we good. Let's go film it.
How do you know he writes movies in a night, in a single night?
He said it all the time. He's like, I wrote Mallrats 3 last night or two or whatever.
But that doesn't mean he wrote the whole thing in one night.
I think he does.
Okay. That
he made like it sound like that. He's like, I just stayed up last night and start to finish wrote Clerks 3 or whatever.
I mean, I hope that's not true.
It's probably true.
He's implied. I don't know for sure if he's not just finishing it, but he's made it sound like he's written. Like, yeah, I stayed up all night and wrote an entire script.
That reminds me back when I was doing some other freelance stuff. My friend had someone who really wanted us to make a short film, and I was going to come in and do some notes on the script. And I looked at it, and it was awful. It was so bad. And then I came in, I was like, okay, I have some things. And she was like, you know, can you believe it? I wrote this script in 15 minutes. And I'm like, yes, I can definitely believe that. Without a doubt, I could believe that because this is a mess. It's awful.
What was it about? Can you say?
I don't remember. I just remember it was bad.
I would love to know what it's about.
Okay. Sorry. And it wasn't the subject matter. It was just the way it was. It was just bad. It was just badly written.
All right. Okay. Wait, I'm just curious. Why did you want to talk about the Kevin Smith movie?
Oh, because I wanted to hear what Nick had to say because he made some pretty pointed comments on Twitter about it, and I was just like, I want to dig a bit deeper, and we did.
I made even more comments on Slack about it. I went on a full rant on Slack.
What did you say? What did you say?
Maybe I can't remember if the rant was about that or about something else. I don't know.
What is wrong with both of you?
I'll get on Slack like late at night when everyone's already asleep and like just post 10 lines about something I'm passionate about.
What the fuck, dude?
And then like no one ever reads it because it just went up at like 3 a.m. and I return the next day and there aren't any comments on it. Everyone's just moved on to the next conversation.
I just don't understand. You said like, oh, I did a whole rant about Kevin Smith. Like I totally tore into him.
But I also ranted like, about other things.
Like, oh yeah, like what? I don't remember. Maybe it was something else.
I think it was very similar to this rant, where it's like his stuff is garbage these days.
Like, I'm looking through Slack right now so I could find it. To be perfectly honest, let's see here.
And this was just last night?
No, this was earlier this week.
No, he wrote Clerks 2 last night. Let's see here, blah blah blah. I don't know, man. Where are you on this?
It would have been a while ago.
Just search his name. Use the search feature, old man.
I am using the search feature, and it sent me to the blah, blah, blah.
Whatever. It's not important. It's similar to what I said here, so.
It's not important. You done? Okay. You're still looking?
I'm still looking, but it doesn't look good. I will say.
While you're looking, we're going to move on. We're going
to
talk
about... Yeah, let's go ahead and move on. I'm not going to... It doesn't look like he had much of anything to say, period.
This massive rant is a massive disappointment.
I thought that he did pretty good. I think we talked about it.
Yeah, I think the rant was pretty close to what we talked about. So
yeah,
no, the one on Slack, the one.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Oh, never mind. You know what? We're clearly not in sync right now. But
nope.
Let's move on. What other story you got here for us, Brandon?
We got the last thing. This is gonna be the last thing, I think. Let me know whether or not you want it to be the last thing. I think it should be the last thing. Universal Pictures and AMC Theaters. So the reason why I think this should be the last thing is because it kind of ties together the death of things, right? So we started talking about the death of Comic-Con, and we're going to end with the death of theaters. So Universal and AMC have put aside like their qualms or concerns, because I don't know if you all remember at the initial outbreak of COVID, Universal was like, you know what? We're going to do a thing and we're going to release Trolls World Tour on video on demand. And the president or CEO or whatever the hell he is of AMC just like came out raging and just went off. And Universal responded relatively, not even curtly. It's just like, hey, you know, we're doing this for all the people that are stuck at home, which is the right answer. And AMC came off looking like complete assholes.
They did.
But, you know, they have put aside their differences and they have come together, and for an undisclosed amount of money, Universal will, and I'm sorry, before I even go on to that, it was so bad that AMC was saying that they weren't even going to carry Fast and Furious movies after this. That's how bad this Trolls World Tour pissed them off. They were like, we don't want your billion-dollar franchises.
So I wrote a title to an article at the time that I was very proud of. It said, uh-huh. Begun the Troll Wars Have.
I was so proud. It is clever, though, Jammer. I apologize for being
super clever. But so undisclosed amount of money, they've put aside their differences, and they're no longer in a feud. And what this deal now means is that 3 weeks after a theatrical release, they're going to be able to put their movies out for rental. And that's kind of huge. And so over the years, we've seen this timeline between theatrical release and video on demand or something like that just get shorter and shorter and shorter. And now it is just destroyed. 3 weeks is nothing. So I feel like the average person that I run into, like, unless they're a super fan of something, that's about how long they wait. They're just like, I don't like crowds. I don't, you know, I got kids. I've got life and stuff. And so I'll see it when I see it. And that 3 weeks is about it, is normal for people. So yeah. I feel like, you know, the three of us are the folks who are like, I need to see that opening weekend or opening night. So I'm curious what you guys think about it. Are there any other additional details to this deal that you want to add in, and what do you think about it?
So there are a couple. There's one deal specifically that it was implied in the article, but it wasn't explicitly stated that there, it sounds like that AMC is going to get a small cut of the PVOD releases after the fact, which makes sense, I guess, to help pad it. But also Universal, NBC Universal guy, the president there, he stated that he thinks this is actually going to help theaters open faster. So here is the logic that he went through, and I guess I could see it on some level, okay? So right now, even if theaters were to open, not enough of them open for studios to really push out new movies. And it's like theaters can be open, but like people aren't going to see anything because it's just old shit and that doesn't drive anything. So the idea is that if they somehow work out a deal to where they can recoup their costs through PVOD relatively soon after, they're more willing to push out new movies. So let me actually find the quote. He said, "We're currently stuck in a kind of chicken and egg situation here in the theatrical business. Movie studios like ours don't want to release movies into theaters when there are only a smattering of theaters open. We need a pretty robust amount of theaters to open to justify our spend. But the flip side is exhibitors can't open up a bunch of theaters if they don't have the new movies to put them in or put in them. Our old library movies aren't going to drive people to movie theaters. So we think this model will actually allow movies to come back to the theaters when it's safe a lot more quickly than they would have in current environment." I can see where he's coming from. It helps expedite this process for the time being. However, I am wondering what's going to happen in a year and a half when everything is back to normal. And is it going to be like, they're not going to go back and say, okay, let's go back to our 90-day deal. Because like we'll have adapted to that 17-day window and it will just be, it won't be the same. So that's like all the information I think that is fit to discuss. But what do you think of that extra added stuff that I mentioned, Brandon?
I think you're right. I think by the time this goes away. So it's interesting. Let me see if I understand that other quote. It's the idea that we have such a backlog of stuff that
it's going to help. The idea that theaters, even if they open right now, maybe studios are not confident enough that they will want to release them in theaters. So maybe if they have this deal to where they put it out for 3 weekends and then they put it out on PVOD, it gives them more of an opportunity to recoup their costs because they're able to more immediately put it out digitally. So that gives movie studios more incentive, or at least Universal more incentive, to put out a movie in theaters when it's safe. And then, because they could just go back to the digital format a few weeks later and then go with that thing.
Got it.
Interesting. And it gives AMC newer movies to show. So people will have more incentive to go out to the theaters.
I was trying to describe, having worked at movie theaters for 10 years and knowing how their side works, I was trying to describe it to my dad, this deal, and he's like, "But why does that work out for AMC?" And I was like, "Well, for this reason." And he's like, "But then they're losing all this money." And by the end of the conversation, I was agreeing with my dad, where I'm like, "I don't know how this works out for AMC. It seems like a big win for Universal and a big loss for AMC, even if they get a portion of the VOD."
Well, here it is. Here's the alternative. They don't open, and then they go under.
Yeah, but I mean, if this is going to stick around.
But we don't know that. That's the thing. It's basically like sticking around. It's like trying to eat that sandwich that you have in your back pocket, knowing that there's not a future sandwich down the line, and kind of hoping that you'll stumble into a restaurant.
Well, you know,
what's a sandwich in your back pocket?
In my backpack. Sorry. Squat. Excuse me if my impromptu metaphor didn't come together perfectly, Jones.
But you know what Republicans say. It's a slippery slope. If you take away
it's a slippery slope.
They'll have no guns at all.
Yeah, I know, but that's like saying, it's like someone come up to you and going like, "Hey, why the fuck are you eating that sandwich?" It's like, "Because I'm going to die if I don't." It's like, well, it's a slippery slope. You eat that sandwich now.
Or it goes in your back pocket.
It's just, you know what I mean? My point is that they don't have a choice. They're not really in a great position to bargain. Like, either they make a deal or they die. Like, what's it going to be?
Dormammu, come to bargain.
Thank you for your wonderful insight to my comments.
One of the reasons, the reason it works out the most, I feel, is it's a one-upping every other studio. I mean, every other theater chain.
Okay.
Where it's like, it's going to make the movie worthless for everyone after 17 days. Or even earlier, if people don't want to go. But I still feel like there'll be movies like Jurassic World, Domination, and Fast and the Furious 9 will be huge theaters before they hit VOD still. Because, you know, everyone likes the event film. I mean, all the fans of those kind of franchises, younger fans love the event film.
I'm not going to the theater to see that.
I'm not going to the theater to see anything until freaking vaccine is done and herd immunity, all that shit's come together. Like I said, I would be surprised if I stepped foot into a movie theater by August of next year.
I don't know if I'll be able to resist Black Widow and Bond.
No, I'll wait.
Oh, if there's a movie that I can resist, it's sure as fuck Black Widow. I'll be all right skipping that.
But no, but you get my, like, because I get why it ultimately long term isn't great for AMC, but also short term making no deal is worse for AMC.
I don't see how it works. I just don't, because I think so. 66% of the people on this podcast just explain why it doesn't work. So you and I, Jammer, have just said, like, I'm not going to do this. And so they'll get some money, but it won't be enough to sustain them. I get your point that some money is better than no money, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to work. I'm just saying that's the rationale behind it.
Sure. I don't know. It'll be interesting. But I do think that, man, I'm stuttering a lot. I do think you're right that at some point we will be acclimated to this new world. And those people who can do that would be willing to pay for it. So $20, how much? So is there any inkling of how much this is going to cost?
They're still saying like $20 a rental, which was been the norm up to this point with the movie.
Yeah, so.
Or even like The Hunt, which were in theaters for like a week.
So think about it like this. Two tickets cost about that.
Say you have three kids.
Yeah. Three kids, popcorn, soda, Twizzlers, and you're already at $50.
Yeah.
So now you got to go to the local drugstore and get that stuff for, you know, a fraction of the price. So the plus side, you get it for a fraction of the price. Downside, you have to go to the store and endanger your life.
Well, you already have to go to get. Get food. So why not pick up some?
I know.
Actually, we get our food delivered to the house. So
yeah, I do too.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. This is such an incredibly small fraction of what they normally get that it just doesn't seem like it. It's like the equivalent of you make $6,000 a month, and I'm going to give you $1,200. Maybe I'm going to give you $1,000. Like, what can you do with that? You can't even pay for your house. You can't even pay.
I mean, going back to the food analogy, that's like if I was, you know, I was really well fed in February and March. And then from March to now, I basically survive off of, you know, maybe a bowl of beans a day. And then they come along and say, and I realize, oh shit, I'm running out of beans. I want to be done in the next 5 months if I don't do something. And someone come along and said, hey,
here's a sandwich from my pocket.
Here's some rice. And I'm like, oh, I can get rice? It's like, yeah, but you know, it may not last you. It may not work long term, but you know, here's some rice for now.
And I'll here's something.
I'm not going to deny the rice.
Yeah, I think that analogy works better for individuals than it does for
businesses.
Yeah, for businesses who have to pay people, right? So these they got to make payroll, and you know, the rice goes into your body and it sustains, you know, like all your little capillaries. Is that you making payroll? Because I don't know that I think that works for a company that is a multinational company where they have to pay people every day.
Isn't AMC just an American company?
No, they're the biggest chain worldwide. They were bought by Wanda Co. or something. They're owned by a Chinese company now.
I like how in that moment, I thought you were going to say Wanda Sykes. I have no idea.
No. By the way, Jammer, I'm going on Shark Tank soon.
What?
Do I owe you a royalty for the idea of a cooler that's built into the back of your pants where you keep sandwiches and other treats?
I'll give you, give me 0.5%.
All right. Done.
Okay.
Now can I get some capital? You always have to have sales. I've been watching a lot of Shark Tank reruns. That's how sad life is.
Give me a proposal along with the technology you plan on using to make this happen.
Just a cooler you tape to your ass.
Well, I need to know how much it's going to cost and if it's going to actually.
How much the coolers and duct tape cost?
Oh.
Is it called junk in a trunk?
Ooh.
Ooh.
I owe you for that.
That's a good one.
All the money.
You should give him more because that's marketing. And that's more important than the idea itself.
And if I ever see this on Shark Tank in the future, I'm going to split someone's throat for stealing it from this podcast or die laughing. I can't decide which.
So what else we got? We got anything? Is that it? Is there anything there?
I think
we covered it. We did it.
That's fit.
We're going to talk about Jurassic World, but I don't even feel like doing that.
I don't feel like
doing that. Not enough new news about it.
I don't feel like talking about the Cretaceous period.
I don't want to see. So, you know what? Let's talk about it. I want to say this. I don't care about another Jurassic World. So that's one of those movies that's included and you kind of worn out your welcome, mostly by having a bad last movie.
I don't know that anyway. So.
Bringing back Laura Dern and Sam Neill won't make me care more about these movies because none of the characters are likable enough for me to be like, yeah, I can't wait to see, you know, Animal Hunter Dude and Business Lady come back with characters I like from the first movie.
Okay, I think here's the most interesting character they're bringing back. That's a different actor. Remember Dotson? Dotson! Nope. I got Dotson here!
Dotson 240Z?
I don't know what the fuck that is, dude.
It's a car.
Oh, well, just the scene where he's sitting at the table and the guy walks up with the briefcase. Newman. And he's like, Dotson! I got Dotson here! He's like, see, no one gives a shit.
Is that...
They're bringing him back.
Are you serious? They're bringing him back?
Not the same actor, because he's either dead or in prison. I can't remember which one. But they're bringing back the character who...
They're pulling out all the stops.
Well, I mean, because it's an interesting character they never explored because he was the first guy to try to buy shit.
Totally. I, you know, the whole time, like for the 20, 30 years that since the franchise started,
I've been wondering
what happened about that Dotson guy.
Well, I just think he's the most... I think he's more interesting including that character than it is to include the rest of the old cast.
That's interesting.
Is he?
No, I don't think so.
I'm not saying he is interesting. I just think it'd be interesting to see what he's been involved in. He could be like that.
What?
No, I'm kidding. Not for you guys.
I think what it would be interesting. What it would be interesting if like he goes up, he's like a refugee and he goes up to the freaking border and the guy was just like, what do you have? And he's like, I don't have anything. And he looks over and he sees his Dotson car and he says, Dotson. And he writes down his name as Dotson. And then we move on. That's how we've got his name. That's what I think.
So it's the prequel.
Exactly.
I feel like this is the worst place to end this podcast, but there's just no choice. Like, oh God.
Well, what have you guys been watching lately? Have you watching? Because it's...
Oh, I got mission news too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But like I said, I've been watching Shark Tank and Perry Mason.
Okay. Tell me about them. Okay, you realize this is more. This is not just me listing things that you're watching. It's
well,
talking about
I finished
about
The Chase on Netflix, and I finished Floor Is Lava on Netflix. And I needed more garbage to watch, so
wait, I love that Chandler's like, this isn't just you listing things. You're just going to list.
No, what I'm listing why I'm on this. It's because I went through all the other garbage shows.
No, it's not about you listing them. It's about you saying, I'm watching this. Here's what I think about it. It's like a mini review, Nick.
Well,
it's
you
not
know why I like Shark Tank already. We discussed Shark Tank. I want to sell them my junk in the trunk.
Okay.
That's and it's fun watching people sell ridiculous products that will never get picked up, and it's crazy how often people's shit does get picked up. That seems insane. But and then Perry Mason is just another excellent HBO show.
What does that mean?
Oh, by saying HBO show, it's already implied that it's dark and there's nudity and there's violence and all
it's
that.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah, well, like Watchmen, any of that.
What is Perry Mason about? For those
Perry
who don't
Mason,
know.
It's a prequel to a 50s TV show.
Okay.
Which is, you know, very formulaic, like episodic. He's a defense lawyer. This is kind of, I mean, it's a soft reboot slash prequel where he's a private eye in 1930s Los Angeles. And he served in World War I, and there's some flashbacks to that. And it's, he's gotten himself, normally he does, like in the first episode, he's hired to tape a fat actor eating food out of a woman's pussy.
Oh my God! Why?
But now he's into a bigger murder case where it was a murder case, but there's a kidnapping, of a child, and like they know there's a fourth man, but there's a whole deal where they had him in a trolley, which were way more common back then in L.A. That drove past a hotel window they told him to stay in, and when they thought the baby was alive because his eyelids were stitched open, so it's really dark detective type stuff, and it ties into this female led church. It's actually owned by the men, but they have like this woman who she has a seizure and then she claims that she's going to bring Charlie back from the dead. He's the name of the baby on Easter Sunday. And it's just, it's really twisty and incredibly dark. And has like John Lithgow, Perry Mason's played by the Emmy Award winner from The Americans. So it's pretty solid.
Okay. See, that's how it's done. Good job. Now, actually,
took a while.
I'm debating whether or not I want to watch it because honestly, the name Perry Mason sounds so boring.
Well, part of
it's funny because I described it. You had no idea what we were talking about before. I was like, Perry Mason. You were like, what? It's like the TV show, Perry Mason. It is the OG procedural drama. You're like, I have no idea what the fuck you're talking about.
Yeah, it sounds so boring. Like I fall asleep halfway. Like you go, Perry. I fall asleep before you get to the Mason. Just because.
Well, what's interesting, the opening credit sequence is just Perry Mason on the screen, but it's done in like a 1930s Hollywood style where at the bottom it like says HBO, you know, like an old MGM logo they would just put over the screen in a black and white movie. I don't know. It just gets into that time period and feeling. Just because the name of a character is boring, I don't think is a reason to dismiss a TV show, especially if you haven't seen a trailer.
No, I hate movies or shows where like it's you don't get any idea of what the thing is about based on like
John Wick.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And then I'm trying to think of another
Iron Man.
Where there's that big show? Oh, that This Is Us. I hate that show. This Is Us. That name doesn't mean dick. This Is Us.
Community. It's a terrible
Community
title.
Makes sense.
If you don't know, if you don't know what it's about, it's a terrible title.
No, but I mean that's at least a little bit.
But it's about a community.
It's about community.
Actually, it makes sense. It makes sense within really the first 5 seconds of watching the show.
Yeah,
Think but if you're just streaming through Netflix, I mean, just
hey, there's a show called Community, and then the first scene is them opening panning on a community college. Like, oh, okay, I get it. And then you get the double, like, oh, it is also a community of people. No. I'm gonna say no. I'm gonna throw
like,
a flag on that one.
Jammer would you watch the first 5 minutes of Perry Mason and you know it's about a kidnapping a detective, even though the name just means nothing to younger people.
I mean, it doesn't help that the name itself is just boring to me. It's very old and boring sounding.
Here's something that might get you into it. It is produced by Robert Downey Jr. So I don't know if that matters.
Honestly, he also did Dr. Dolittle, so there's that.
Did he produce it? Oh, I guess he did produce it, didn't he?
I mean, it's worth checking. I'll take a look.
It's great.
So,
but I have a tendency not to like the same kind of TV shows as a lot of people. Like everyone likes these really sort of true detective type shows. I don't. They're kind of boring, and
it's not like True Detective.
Okay.
It's not
like because a lot of HBO's like content is like sort of these dark, gritty mystery type shows that are kind of boring. They're too long. I feel like, why are you this long? You could be half your length. That's what I feel like about a lot of them.
That's what she said.
Is that what she said? I don't know. I feel like she's the opposite to me.
That's me. Also.
So it is much more like a gritty. Did you ever watch something like The Maltese Falcon or something like that?
Very.
Right. So it's like that. So imagine like a gritty, pulpy film noir kind of like that. That's what this is, and it happens to have a modern looking aesthetic because it was made now. Like that's it.
See, a better name would have been Perry Noir, and they would have wanted to drink wine as well.
Name.
Yeah, but then you don't get the tie-in that no one our age knows.
Yeah,
No one
heard of that before. That's why when it was announced, I was like, "What? I gotta see a trailer for this." I know it's like Columbo or something. It's older than Columbo, but you're like, yeah, everyone knows the name. It's just
not
what I expected.
Hey, Jammer
knows the name. Not me.
Matlock.
So. I've always wanted to direct one of my first ideas for a script was, and this was back when Will Ferrell was more popular amongst people, but I wanted to do a Matlock movie kind of parody, like Starsky and Hutch looked like Will Ferrell playing Matlock when he's older. Yeah. Like give him another 10 years and he'd play Matlock. And he would just be solving stupid mysteries that don't matter.
I would watch that.
Yeah.
I would totally watch that. Were they contemporaries, Matlock and Perry Mason? I feel like they had to have been.
At the time. Oh.
The originals.
Matlock's definitely contemporary.
Yeah.
I think Perry Mason was still a little bit of a period. No, it was about the time because it was set after the.
No. I mean, like, did those shows exist around about the same time? Perry Mason and Matlock.
I think Perry Mason's a lot earlier than like Matlock or Columbo or something.
Yeah, I know Matt Columbo is not even close.
But Matlock's like 80 or something. But
Jammer, what you watching?
We finished the finale of Central Park, which is
you sad. You gonna cry?
Apple TV Plus show. Very sad. It was. It's one of my highlights of the year so far. To be perfectly honest, it is so much fun. The premise is about the Central Park. Park manager he and his family live in like this fun looking house within the actual premises of Central Park. And it's about a billionaire lady who's trying to take the park and buy it and turn it into like a big mall type area and just sell it off and stuff and basically turn it into commercial real estate. And then you have episodes that are sort of day-to-day goings on in the family and stuff. And that's the overarching plot. But there's like 3 to 5 songs a week or an episode, and they're all really fun and ridiculous and catchy and heartwarming. And it's just a great show. It's all around awesome. I can't say enough nice things about it. And yeah, I'm excited for next season. This is a
You're not getting another season.
Yeah, it has another season. What do you mean? Yes, it is. What are you talking about? It's already renewed.
Apple TV is going to go away. Yeah.
You know, it's funny because I actually want to write an article about the tragic state of Apple TV Plus, because I've said this before.
That's my own goddamn fault.
No, here, let me talk. Basically, it has like the best track record of any streaming TV series or any streaming service ever, where it's like all of the shows that I've watched on it are all fantastic. Like there isn't a bad one I've watched so far. And it just sucks that there are so few of them and that so many people don't have it or don't use it. Yeah, and right. it sucks just because the shows are great. I love them all so far that I've seen. Like they're all way above average. They're all exceptional, or many of them are, all the ones that I've seen so far.
Okay. So you've said your thing. That's what you want to say.
Central Park. Central Park is great. Go see Central
Park. I'm going to repeat the thing I was going to say. Or that's your own goddamn fault.
Watch the thing on. Okay. Good for you. I agree.
I agree. I can't.
I don't understand why they felt the need to get into it. I don't know why they're doing that. Their business strategy somehow didn't work. They somehow made it free for everyone who gets an Apple product, and yet it still has really no low numbers, which is weird. But I am just happy that they were able to assemble so many great talents together to put together at least a couple of seasons of shows that I think are really good. So I will consider that a net positive.
I don't think that that's weird. I mean, look at what's the product that they sell the most of. It's the phone. So I'm not going to watch that on my phone.
Plus, doesn't require an Apple TV to even put it on your television?
No. Oh, to put it on your television? Yes.
Yeah.
That's so why the big hell problem.
You can do it on a Vivio. Vivio, is that what's called? Vivio?
Oh, I'm sorry. You have to have a specific type of TV.
I don't know. It's just, there are some shows I would like to watch on it, but it's also incredibly hard. Like, I can just share a password with a friend and he can watch Hulu. My friend tried to share his password with me for this, since he's not even going to use it, but it's locked to his Apple Music account. So if he shares it, he loses his Apple Music. So it's like, oh, cool. It can't even be shared to people who are interested in it. So they're bye-bye views. Bye-bye.
Yep. They're all about that. It's not great, but what they have there is great. Like I said, I'll consider it a net positive. And hopefully if Apple TV doesn't survive, that these shows will be picked up by other services.
Maybe.
Because there are at least a handful that I want to see continue.
Okay. Well, hopefully that happens if you enjoy it. That'd be exciting for you. It's so weird. Again, somebody like me who has one of these devices has it for free, and I'm just like, no, it's not worth it.
I keep telling you to watch Central Park. Watch Central Park.
I can't. I'm not going to watch it on my phone. It's just not going to happen.
All right.
Not going to happen.
They got Leslie Odom Jr. They got David Diggs. They got Kristen Bell, Titus Burgess, Catherine Hahn, Stanley Tucci. Who else?
So a lot of cheap people.
What the hell are you talking about?
Stanley Tucci will show up in anything.
How dare you, sir?
I love him, but he'll show
up. He's amazing. He plays an old woman. It's great.
I mean, so here, I'll put it to you like this. So I pulled up Apple statistics.
Oh, they're not great. I'm sure they're not great.
No, not even just Apple TV, like Apple, period.
Okay.
So they sold 49 million phones in the second quarter of 2020. And I'm looking at Q2 2020. So that made up 49% of their total sales. Their Macs, so like MacBooks, which both you and I have, made up 9% of their sales. That's the second highest number. Okay. iPad 7.5, wearables, home and accessory 10.78%, and services.
It's a whole combination of things. That's why.
Yes. Yeah. There were just multiple things. So wearables, home and accessories, I imagine that's where
Apple Watch,
Apple TVs, Fit. Yeah, and so that's all of those things. So there's no way you're going to get any kind of traction on that unless you allow me to use something like a Chromecast in the rest of the world.
They should do. I don't know why they're not, why they're doing that. It's stupid. They should definitely let people use different streaming devices like a Roku or a Chromecast or whatever.
What have you been watching, Jonesy?
I have been watching not much of anything. So I've been doing more reading. I've been reading a bunch of One Piece. So I had to stop that so I could work on this article. Today, right before the podcast, I watched a ton of Transformers. So if anyone listening is interested, we did an interview with Lindsay Rousseau, who plays Alita One in Transformers War for Cybertron. And it was a great interview. It was a lot of fun. And the show is pretty good. It's interesting. The characters that they're presenting these Transformers to be. So they're all the classics. So you've got your Soundwave and your Starscream and your Optimus Prime and your Megatrons and etc. The thing that's cool about it is they're presenting them almost like real people, and in the sense that they're very hesitant to kill some of them. Like, it's so weird. Megatron has been presented as this character who just like can't wait to get his gun off. Like, he's very smart and methodical, but he just wants to, like, he'll fucking kill you, right? And in this, it builds to that. There are people and characters where he's just like, let me think about it. It's like, what? And it's just interesting. So they're presenting this as kind of there are politics to this, and you know, insurgencies and terrorists. And it's presented as a real world with real people, and it's interesting. So the politics of the Transformer world are pretty good. The only thing is, it's only 6 episodes, and I watched 5 of them today.
Oh no!
Oh shit! So it's almost done.
Yeah, it's almost over. Tears. So we'll see how that goes, and then hopefully. I hope there's a date on the new one.
You know what's
already.
Funny is I literally was thinking to myself, it's like, oh yeah, it's like for some reason the show that came to mind at first was Genlock. I was like, oh yeah, that was 6 episodes. That was done quickly. And I was like, wait, this is also Rooster Teeth. I thought that was funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I've also been watching Perry Mason, and I already talked about that a little bit. I'm kind of lukewarm on it. I'm not as into it as Nick is, which I feel like is very consistent for our relationship. There are things where he's like, ah, this is the greatest thing ever. And I'm like, it's fine. But the weird thing is, even though I'm not super into it, I'm still watching it. Also, it's like mild curiosity now at this point, because it's not bad. It's just not particularly great or good. It's not like Watchmen. It's not like True Detective season 1 or 3. It's just a thing. So I just watch a thing.
That's how I felt about Mad Men.
And any other... Is that good? Should I watch that?
No.
I never finished it.
I never liked it.
Okay.
Wow. Tension went, you guys are the first ones that aren't like, oh, Mad Men is the best thing ever.
It was. I saw Breaking Bad and I'm like, wow, AMC can do way better.
Yeah. I just couldn't get into it. I saw a couple episodes and yeah, it's fine. Finishing up Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So I'm glad that's about to go off. Not because I'm not enjoying it, but I like that it's concluding. So... probably right when I get off the podcast with you guys, I'm going to catch this week's episode. And is there anything else I'm watching? Try something else. Nothing else I can think of. So yeah, that's it. Those are the things I'm reading and watching and doing.
All right. We all ready for some news before we exit?
God damn it. Sure.
God damn it.
All right. This is from the Daily Mail. It seems like
such a probably a lie.
That's probably a lie. And it reads like a lie. Locals fear Mission Impossible filmmakers plan to blow up, all caps, historic Polish bridge for a stunt in the latest Tom Cruise movie and plead with the producers not to destroy our heritage.
I hope they do it.
Here are the notes.
Wait, why are you wasting our time?
The 490 feet 5 suspension bridge was built over Poland's Lake something in 1909. I can't pronounce it. It was closed in 2016. Reports claim it's set to be blown up by the film crew. Producers have not denied the rumors, but say the bridge will be put back into use.
And did they blow it up?
The scene with Christopher McQuarrie was seen with construction workers at the site, I guess.
I can just imagine him going, like, him looking at them going, like, hey, so what if we just blew it up? And they're just like, what? I thought we were just doing repairs. Like, no.
No.
What if it's just gone? Do you think we could put it? We could actually make it open for use after we blow it up, and then they're like, "Yeah, maybe."
It's not so Zack Snyder. Christopher McQuarrie's a smart man,
I guess.
Wow.
Yeah, shots fired.
Snyder's like Kevin. Wow. At this point, his head's up his own ass.
Okay, I'm sorry, but no.
Yes, and yes.
No.
And that's our show, folks.
I wish we were doing this on video so you guys could see how big my eyes are right now. Like, holy shit.
I just want to get a rise out of Jammer.
It's not.
Did you? No. I feel like, no, I don't think that's what that was. I think you just wanted to shit on Zack Snyder.
I really don't like him. But
why? Hmm. Actually, no, we're done. We're done.
And that's
we're,
like
we're fucking done professionally.
We talk about offline. Talk this about is long. Offline.
This is long. This is a long episode.
And dear listener, if you like this long episode that you've heard, do all the socials. Like, rate, subscribe, comment. You can feel free to tell Nick how right or wrong he is about Zack Snyder. We would definitely appreciate you letting him know. Also, LRM has other great content that can be found on LRMonline.com. So go check that out. We've got articles, we've got podcasts, we've got all of the things that you like to do. Jammer, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at JamTheWriter, and you can find all my books under the name AJ Serna on Twitter, on Amazon and on Audible. And of course, all my entertainment news related stuff at LRMonline.com, where I serve as the editor in chief.
I was trying to imagine reading one of your books with 140 or however many characters you can do now on Twitter, like at a time.
Like that would be torture. It's hard enough for me when people say like the first few chapters are up on my website. I'm like, never am I ever going to read it on a website. I hate reading books on websites. People are like, why don't you just release it on a blog? And I'm like, no, I don't want to do that. And then people are like, oh, I released it on this website where I read it. No, I don't want to read it on a website. Give me an e-reader or give me a book.
You should put it on Medium.
The hell? Oh.
What?
Right. It's just a website.
No, I'm serious. Well, I think it reads. It's close enough. It comes close enough to being like a reader. Where?
No, it's more of like I just don't like looking at a screen when I'm reading a book. So it's all about the screen. It's all about the screen. I already get my face pelted enough with blue light all day. I don't need it when I'm reading for enjoyment.
ScreenGeeks.com, baby. And Nick Dahl, where can the good people find you?
At LRM_Nick on Twitter, and I've just launched a new website called Zack Snyder Can Suck My Dick.com.
Wow. I hope you actually bought the domain. Oh. If not,
I haven't. And I don't feel that strongly about it, but. Joke. Stupid joke.
Despite this being my last podcast, you can find me on Twitter at Sir Jonesius and contributing to LRM Online. Yeah. Hasta lasagna.
Don't get any on ya.
Mission Impossible reference.